The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. My guest today from New World Wine Tours, the owner of New World Wine Tours, Mackenzie Puttisi, is joining me on the pod. First, Mackenzie, scale 1 to 10. How did I do on your last name?
Oh, that was a 10. 10 out of 10.
Okay, well, I'm only going to say it once. I'm a coward. For the rest of the interview, it's just going to be Mackenzie this, Mackenzie that.
Because that's perfect.
I'm horrible on name pronunciations. It's quite embarrassing.
Oh, don't worry.
So, yeah, I was excited to have you on because I hadn't had anyone who does wine tours. And I sort of wanted to talk about it. First, just how did it get started for you?
Yeah. Well, so basically, I used to work full-time at a restaurant in downtown Toronto called Key, which is kind of like a high-end Japanese concept.
Yeah, Key. Is that like Bay at...
Yeah, Bay and Wellington.
Bay and Wellington. Yeah.
So I was there for a little over 5 years, started serving, and I'd always loved wine. I used to teach English abroad for a number of years, and so I was in places like France and got to visit Italy, South Africa, Argentina. So it was kind of a hobby come career through just the happenstance of life.
Yeah.
But after about 3 years being there and having had the opportunity to do some studies and WSET courses and that through work, I kind of wanted to get out of the full-time restaurant gig.
The hours are tough.
It is, you know, and you're like on your feet and this. And so,
yeah.
Yeah. So then because I'd done so much travel before and I speak some Spanish and French and was into foreign languages, it all kind of tied into this concept of travel and tourism. And so a friend of mine had done this really like niche trip from Paris out into Champagne. And she was like, oh, you should look at doing that for people, you know, out of Toronto, and maybe you can do it in multiple languages. So that was kind of the spark. And I kind of checked out what else was out there, what people were offering to see if it was viable and logical. And then, you know, had a few connections from working at the restaurant with certain vineyards we'd been stocking or pouring their wines, and one thing led to the next. And
there you go.
And that's kind of how it all began.
Yeah. No, that makes total sense. All right. And some things you said I want to hit on. Explain to people the average day when you were working at Key in terms of your hours on, you know, a Thursday or a Friday night.
Well, Thursday is wild because Bay Street, Thursday is the big night.
Okay, you know what? Let's go there. Yeah. So for people who don't know, what is the biggest difference of a downtown Bay Street bar on a Thursday night versus a Saturday night?
It's so funny because you'd have people come in on a Saturday night and they're like, oh, is it going to get busy later? Because it's like no one's there.
Yeah.
And then on a Thursday, you have to put like velvet ropes up by the bar so that the servers can pick up their drinks because there's so many people that like you can barely get in sideways through the crowd.
Yeah. And it's just because that's the night where, you know, where the men and women who work, you know, on Bay Street, that's their night to party. And then the weekend is for the family.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like Friday at 4 p.m. They might have like last drinks or something.
And they're running
getting
to the
back home or getting off to the cottage in the summer, you know.
Oh, yeah. That's true as well. Then everyone's up in Muskoka.
Yeah.
So then what is a Thursday night like in terms of hours?
Definitely. I mean, you've got to be ready to go at 4 and then you're going to be slammed till at least 9 or 10, and then if there's any events or games or anything in the area, you know, you could be there till 1 a.m. when you're closing up.
Okay, now, I have more questions, and we are going to talk all about the wine tours, but I remember I was interviewing Allison Vidug, who is the wine manager for the Shore, and we laughed about how the Bay Street, one of the worst Bay Street things is when they would order the seafood tower and then get a Napa cab.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So how often at Key, because, you know, you can get excellent sushi. Mm-hmm. How often was it sushi with like an Australian Shiraz or, you know, or again,
too often.
Or the you know, the cake bread and sushi.
Yeah. Can we get a $300 sashimi platter and cake bread? Too often. I mean, people are getting better. You know, I think once you have a rapport with your guests, they trust you to make good suggestions.
Yeah.
But if you're just some guy on the floor, you know, they want to impress their guests and you know, there's kind of these almost like buzzwords in terms of wine and food that people are like, oh, that's good, you know, rather than being like, oh, we want a Riesling, a Rosé, a Muscadet, you know, a something that might pair up
nicely. Go get like a Grand Cru Huet, you know, Riesling with that sushi. And it's, again, it's nothing against the wine. It's just, it's so big, you're not going to fully appreciate the sushi. And I'm a believer that a lot of the food wine pairings, I'm fine if you don't follow them. There's only a couple. And the, you know, delicate, you know, just the sushi or the fish with a big red. That's one of the few I'm like, just avoid. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want old world light Pinot with it, you know, or a Gamay.
Yeah, perfect.
Great. Knock yourself out. But yeah, so those big ones there. All right. So let's talk about the wine tours. Mm-hmm. What for you, because obviously Southern Ontario.
Yeah.
Two biggest regions would be Niagara and Prince Edward County.
Yeah.
What are the biggest differences between those two areas?
So I guess, I mean, Niagara's more historic, more developed, a bit more grandiose in terms of some of the estates and the buildings there.
So it's Bordeaux, and then Prince Edward County's Burgundy.
I would say that's a pretty good analogy.
It's a generalization, but it seems to be.
But it's true. I mean, like, it's a little bit warmer down in Niagara. You have a little more diversity in terms of microclimates and soils and elevations. And so you can get some, like, great Pinot and Riesling and higher acid wines, but you can also ripen some pretty good medium plus to nearly full-bodied reds in Niagara. Whereas in the county, I mean, Pinot is kind of king or queen, whatever you want to call it. Great amount of beautiful Chardonnay, and then some aromatic whites and high citrus whites and sparklings. But I mean, it's pretty tough to ripen anything other than Pinot in terms of red. I'm sure there's a winemaker out there will tell me I'm wrong. But like, for the most part, you rock up at the vineyards, and that's what you're getting. It's like Pinot, Chardonnay is like 70% of the offering there.
And then you get a little Riesling, or I've tried the odd Chenin Blanc, but like I would be very wary. I mean, hell, even Niagara, unless it's certain years, I'm wary of 100% Cabernet Sauvignon anywhere in Southern Ontario. But in Prince Edward County, it feels to me that if Prince Edward County, if someone's doing it, it's more for marketing and sales than it is for the best expression of that grape in that area.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm seeing like a few people have done where they have land down in Niagara, or they're buying fruit from Niagara. So then they can make an awesome Cab Franc, but it's not actually county fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And Cab Franc, I think it's the best, at least in Niagara. I think it's, it's that or Pinot. That's the best grape. Like we do killer Cab Franc here in Ontario, especially in Niagara.
Yeah, we do. And I think it's still both locally and internationally not that appreciated yet.
No. Oh, no. Oh, absolutely.
The more of it out there is getting, it's just getting better and better. And so I think when people start discovering it, they're like, oh, why are we not drinking this earlier?
I always, and I'm sure you get this. Oh, okay. How often do you get this on tours? And I would say it's a higher percentage of men versus women who will say this. I'm not going to drink an Ontario red.
Oh, yeah.
That come up a lot?
Too often. But, I mean,
it's easy to convince them. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't like an Ontario red? Here's Pearl Marsette's Cab Franc.
Exactly.
You're still not going to drink an Ontario red?
And I always say to people, too, I'm like, you look at the climate. You know, it's a cool to moderate climate. Just like we can't ripen pineapples up here, you're not going to get the same red wines you're going to get in hot Californian or Australian climates. And so, I mean, it's kind of foolish to expect it here.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where we were as an industry here for a while. It was like, let's be California. Let's emulate the success there.
Totally agree.
And it was kind of the wrong choice. And now we're on the side of finding the right expression of wine for what our reality is.
Yeah.
And now we're producing some beautiful wines, but there's still not Napa. There's still not Australia.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, Two Sisters, because of the money they spend, they can do a good Merlot and they can do a good Bordeaux blend. But, and also I would tell everyone, avoid Cabernet Sauvignon from 2019. It was such a cold year.
Yeah.
So tell me about some of like the tours, like the packages you guys do.
Yeah. So it's very small scale. I mean, we can do some larger groups, but for the most part,
larger groups stink.
Well, and it even limits us, right? Yeah. Like, we can't take you to places with 14 people that we can take you with six or four, you know? And so mostly that's what we want to do. You know, you can get a bus to Niagara. You can do some of these bigger package tours out of Niagara-on-the-Lake, and they're great for what they are. But I mean, we want to get you to smaller, off-the-beaten-path vineyards that you probably wouldn't find on your own or wouldn't be able to access in another way. And so generally, we depart and return from Toronto, mm-hmm. or return to Toronto. So it's a day trip, usually about like 8 to 10 hours. Leave in the morning, visit kind of 3 to 4 vineyards, stop for lunch. If you want to visit a place like Niagara-on-the-Lake or the Falls, that's kind of an option. But yeah, mostly trying to visit smaller to medium-sized wineries where you're going to get more terroir-driven expressions of wine and have a little more of an intimate experience at the vineyard.
Oh, yeah. And that's, I mean, that's key. You want to be able to, you know, a couple minutes with a winemaker, an owner, someone, you know, directly connected with it. I always laugh. The difference between the energy level.
Yeah.
Of the person on the first as they're driving there, mm-hmm. versus on the way home when usually people are asleep, full, and tipsy. It's like the difference between people when they fly to Vegas. On the way there, like, they are gunned up. And on the way home, they're like, just get me home. I have to go to sleep. Like, just how much of a contrast do you see?
Yeah, I noticed that. I mean, on all the trips, but Prince Edward County especially, because it's a longer drive, a bit of a longer day.
Yep.
9 times out of 10... if not all the guests, like at least one is snoozing on the way home.
Yeah.
Whereas on the way, they're like, we're going to drink. They're chatty. They got their coffee. They're like going crazy.
Oh, they're ready.
They're ready. They for are a big ready day for it. Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny.
Especially if you hit four is aggressive. Yeah. Like four is, you got to leave early and you've got to be at the first winery right at 10 a.m.
Yep.
or 11 at the latest, whenever they open, you got to be the first ones there.
Yeah.
I always tell people, 3 to me is the sweet spot where if you see a fourth that you want to duck into for a moment, maybe. But yeah
that's and that's kind of like what we guarantee. So I'd say like we're going to go to 3 for sure. And then if for whatever reason we're like snappy and moving ahead of schedule and we've got an extra 45 minutes, yeah, let's pop into another spot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think with a well-structured tasting of, you know, 4 or 5 wines and really learning about the vineyard and getting experience, you're usually there for a good hour.
Yeah.
Oh, and so
yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you want to comment. Now, are you on the tours with them or are you back at like a home base?
Both. Like when I started, it was just me.
Yeah.
And now there's, I guess, 4 of us who do the different wine trips throughout the summer. And so
are you driving or do you have a driver and you're there talking to people?
We'll drive and guide.
Okay. Yeah. And I bring that up because have you ever like you're going into the winery and then you notice there's like a stretch limo and there's a stagette and then there's, you know, you can tell there's a couple other groups and you must be like, oh God.
It's like the slow motion, like,
no. Thing.
Yeah. It's like, oh no.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when it's a busy time of year and like Saturdays especially, we'll reach out to wineries in advance so they know we're coming kind of thing. Whereas if it's like a Tuesday or something.
Just drop
in. Yeah, you know, it's no biggie. We can kind of like play it by ear and customize.
That is a pro tip, by the way. Anyone listening who want to do wine tours, A, fully recommend. Either you go on your own or use Mackenzie's services. I would suggest, by the way, use Mackenzie's services. Nothing worse than driving. Thanks. And then you're doing the alcohol math.
Exactly.
You can't fully appreciate the slightly oaky notes of the Chardonnay because you're thinking, well, I better eat more crackers because I've got to drive.
It's true.
Yeah,
if you're not staying overnight, it's so nice to have a driver.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And do it on a weekday. That's why, if you can, I've gone to visit wine. Usually when I do it, because I have weird hours, I'll always go on a weekday versus a weekend. Now, I don't know how much you can comment on this. And the reason I asked you if you go on the tours.
Yeah.
Is there anything more annoying than the one person on the tour who's taken a class and they read Wine Spectator and they need to prove to everyone in the group that they know what fermentation is and that they want to prove to everyone how much they know about wine?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to answer that. Blink twice if you agree.
Yeah, there we go. Right? Yeah. I don't know. Like, I'm one of those people. I'm like, highly agreeable in the sense that I don't know. Like for me, I'm like, oh, you know, if that's what you feel, whatever it is you need to do in your time.
You're very nice, Mackenzie. Okay, here's what I'll say. I don't mind someone showing off a little bit because you love wine. You're passionate about it.
But you got to be accurate too. I hate when someone's showing off and then they're giving bad information.
Yeah.
And then I feel awkward because then I'm like, well, I don't want to correct them rudely, but I also don't want to get like allow misinformation to circulate on my watch.
Yeah, that'd be great. Someone's like, no, the cocoa note, the cocoa and cinnamon, that comes from stainless steel.
Yeah,
and maybe not. But here's what bothers me. Like, because I got my WSET diploma a bunch of years ago.
Been
a while, but like, I shut the bleep up. Mm-hmm. And the reason is, if I have very specific questions, I will ask as we're moving, and I'll ask the winemaker or whoever on the side.
Yeah.
Or I'm like, I can go and do the research on my own. What I don't like is when someone keeps asking so many questions and it delays the rest of the group. Yeah. I know you want to find out exactly what the oak program was of this Chardonnay, but there's tech sheets and you can look it up.
Yeah. Well, there's a time and a place for everything, right? Like, if it's like you and your partner and a couple friends and you're all into wine and you want to ask questions and take the time,
yes,
that's appropriate.
Group of 10 where it's the same one person.
Exactly, right? And if you're in a big group and everyone else is like, God, move along, then know when to kind of curb your enthusiasm.
Oh, yeah. It read the room.
Exactly.
It's basically just read the room. And like, I'm allowed, you know, extrovert. But even I'm like, in moments like that, I'm like, nope, I'm going to try to do it on the sly because I don't, I hate wasting people's time. Here's, by the way, the one tip I also give, and this might be bad for you.
Okay.
Because you have to be in the cars or the buses or the vans with these people. I always tell everyone, if you want to try more wine, but you don't want to come off as garish and you feel guilty, I always say, use the word revisit. Excuse me, I'm sorry to bother. Could I revisit the Pinot? I couldn't quite get the fruit structure.
That's when really, a pro tip.
When really all you want to do is guzzle more free booze because you're enjoying the red wine, but you don't want to look like the greedy alcoholic. I'm always like, just say revisit. Now you seem classy and you'll get a lot more.
That is a great tip.
Yeah.
I might have to give that up.
It's when I do wine events, I always tell people that.
Yeah.
Of course, if I was on a bus or leading a tour bus, I would never give that tip.
True, true. Yeah.
What are some of your favorite wineries? I noticed in some of your writings, you're a fan of Long Dog.
Yeah, Long Dog is great.
Yeah.
And it's so just like authentic and organic. Like,
And that's, by the way, Prince Edward County. I've talked about this spot before. Prince Edward County, killer Pinot and Chardonnay with some tasty rosés thrown in every now and then.
Yeah. So like in the county, most of the wineries are kind of around that hillier region just north of Wellington.
Yeah.
But like Long Dog and a couple like Light Hall. Yep. And
the one begins with an E, Exultant or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Those three are kind of like right around Milton. And great Pinot down there. Some cool stuff. And husband, wife, they're so sweet.
Yep, James.
Yeah. And like last time I was, well, maybe it wasn't the last time, but one of the last times I was there, we went in and got to like taste out of some of the barrels. And James was cultivating like mushrooms onto these logs. And like, it's just so Burgundy. You know, like it's the earth and the soil and the dampness and just like embracing all that locality.
It's great.
Yeah, it's delicious.
I remember there going there once and he said, Matt, would you like, because I've been there a bunch of times and I am a advocate of it, so I've gotten to know him. Mm-hmm. And so he took me and my girlfriend Amy down and he's like, would you like some rosé? I'm like, sure. So out of the barrel, he put a little Pinot, put a little Chardonnay, whisked it together, said, here, try some rosé. So just like, just a fun guy.
Yeah.
And an impressive guy. Tricky question. I wasn't like, I have my notes for all my questions. I didn't think about this till now. Would it be difficult? Do people ever ask to go see Norm Hardy?
Yeah. Okay. This is a tricky question.
You know what? I'm going to go first. I'll give you a little time and we'll cover. Uh-huh. I feel sorry for the other winemakers, the people that pick the grapes, because what people need to know is a lot of times the grape pickers, they come in from Mexico. They come in from all over the world.
Yeah.
And these people, they know the vines. They know the hills. These are brilliant pickers, and they use the same ones each and every year.
Yeah.
Now, with what Norm Hardy did, it's going to hurt sales, as it should. Mm-hmm. But it's going to, like, his actions are going to impact so many other people that there's part of me that feels bad. Now, and by the way, anyone listening, if you still buy Norm Hardy or if you don't know what's going on, I'm not here to judge you. I've stopped buying Norm Hardy because there's plenty of other good Pinot and Chard.
Yeah.
But it's a great setup. The pizza restaurant is fantastic. And those are killer wine. Like, he was one of the tip of the... Norm Hardy is incredibly important when you tell the story of Ontario wine. Mm-hmm. It just so happened that, you know, he's a bit of a... he's a shithead. He's done bad things.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and we used to go there, like, religiously. That was, one of the highlight spots of going on tour. And so, I mean, my policy was, you know, I don't know exactly how to deal with this. I don't know...
Tricky.
Well, it is tricky because, like, I mean, how do you pick sides when you have only so much information? And, like, you know, more has come out since, like, the original kind of blow up.
Yeah.
But as a general policy, we've decided we're not going to go there on tour unless requested.
Yeah.
And if someone wants to go, I mean, ultimately, you're paying us to show you a good time. Mm-hmm. And if it's your day and you want to be there, well... you want to be there.
And the money that they spend, it, like, I mean, here's what I hope. I hope he, you know, just, you know, leaves and that they can continue and there's the other winemakers can continue, you know, because it's great wine.
Yeah.
And it's funny, I wasn't even thinking about it until we started doing the interview. And then, you know, I'm like, oh, man, what about Norm Hardy? So, and it's a tough one for everyone.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's like, this may be a funny analogy, but like recently they talked about outlawing foie gras in New York. It's like, well, yeah, but it's delicious.
It is delicious.
You know, it's kind of one of those things.
Where I know.
You know, like you don't want to support certain things in this world, but then
morale. Well,
and this is even more difficult because, like you said, there's so many people involved with Norm Hardy as a winery, the winemakers, the seasonal workers. Mm-hmm. You know, like how do you draw, it's not black and white.
It's not. Now, I don't know if you know this. I did some research on foie gras.
Okay.
How they make it is all these geese, they live a full, happy life. Mm-hmm. And then they go up to the farmer and say, I would like to be foie gras now. And then he waves a magic wand. Uh-huh. And before he touches the geese or goose, they say, thank you. And then magically it's foie gras.
I would like to believe that.
I know.
But it sounds a little bit unrealistic.
I do a lot of charity work on the other side, so does it balance out that it's really delicious? I mean, I don't have it all the time.
There you go.
Moving on. what are some of the other, like, some of the other wineries? That's how I got off traffic. First off, Kloss and Chase.
Yeah, fantastic. I think is,
yeah, one of
my favorite, and for so many reasons. I mean, like, the wine is great, incredible Pinot and Chardonnay. They've got a beautiful location. It's like this iconic purple lavender barn with, like, a gorgeous garden. Recently, they opened up this kind of sandwich shop they called the Swinery, which was in the old pig pen. It's just great. It's like one of my favorite spots out there. I feel like it can't possibly disappoint.
Oh, no.
Unless you hate Pinot and Chardonnay, maybe.
Then why are you there?
Exactly, right? You know. But other than that, like, it's just great.
Yeah.
Other wineries.
And also Niagara as well. You know, I know we're in Prince Edward, but no, I'd love to hear more from Prince Edward and Niagara. Like, just some of your favorites. Like, what are some of the best ones for people to tour to?
Yeah, so like Trail Estates, I love. They're kind of like fun, craft, small batch. They do some funky, cool stuff. Hinterland, if you're into the sparkling scene, is quite cool.
Yep.
What else do I love? Kente, it does some amazing Pinot.
And also value. I find Kente, like, their $30 Pinot is it's excellent.
Yeah, really good.
And I know people think $30 is value, but when you are a small winemaker, you don't have economy of scale. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, I think most of it's handpicked, and $30 is what you're gonna spend.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, wow. So those are some highlights. The Old Third, they don't produce a lot, but they're, like, really cute and charming, just up the road from Clausen.
Yep.
And then Niagara side, down in like the peninsula area, I'm a huge fan of Stratus.
Yes.
Probably one of my favorite vineyards there.
Their Syrahs are killer.
Yeah. They do some amazing, just everything. Like I just can't fault them. Other than maybe they're expensive.
They're not cheap.
You know,
they are not cheap. Other than that, you know,
like, I feel like there's never a wine there I'm like, yeah, take it or leave it. I feel like, no, I like everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're like a solid, you know, gold star for me. I like Big Head. They have some interesting stuff. Recently this year, I've been into Hinterbrook. It's like a little spot. They have like a label called Nomad, which you may have seen. It's over on like by the lakeshore near Conzelman's.
Okay. I haven't seen that one.
Yeah. I don't know like their history too much, but they've got like this really simple kind of labeling and like they've got Pinots, they've got some ice wines, Sauve Blanc, some bigger reds. It's kind of a fun little spot.
The slight moment. I'm actually having wine being dropped off. This is horrible pod by me. En route, see you soon. I got someone coming to drop off wine. I actually have two different consignment companies. I'm hoping my girlfriend is upstairs, doesn't notice.
There you go.
You know, it's like the only thing I
have. Wine again?
I know. I'm like, hey, you're going to be drinking it as well. I buy it to share. Do you have Holy Grail Ontario wineries that haven't let you in yet? That Ooh. You'd like to take for tours, but you know they're difficult. They don't want groups. Is there any like that, or is everyone pretty warm and opening?
I think the toughest ones are just like, Pearl Morissette.
hold on. What are we doing? Let's just say it. Pearl Morissette.
Uh huh.
That is, yeah. It's. I've been for one tasting just because I knew someone who knew someone.
Exactly.
But like, I'm on their wine list, like they, you know, to buy their wine. All their wine is always sold out.
Yeah.
And the restaurant, you got to book like 3 months in advance. The worst thing that happened, now I'm ranting, I apologize, was when they got all that press. Yeah. When like the New York Times and stuff, like, damn it. Once everyone else gets to know them, Pearl Morissette, that's the one.
Yeah. So I'd say that is like the one.
Yeah.
Five Rows, because they're so tiny.
Ooh, good wine.
You know, like great wine, but so small production.
Yeah.
Like, not always open, not always available for tastings.
Yeah.
And then they're not that tough, but like for bigger groups like Domaine Quellis with like Thomas Batchelder.
I just interviewed him a couple weeks ago.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, Quellis is great.
Love that
Batchelder, he is a mad scientist, meets artist, meets all these other things. Mm-hmm. Killer. Like some of the single vineyard Chardonnay and Pinot, some of the best I've ever had. Here's something to talk about.
Yeah.
Those wines, and not just them, but others like Clos and Chase, they compete with Burgundy.
Yeah.
I know we always, and I see why we do, because Burgundy's bleeping awesome.
Yeah.
We put it on a pedestal, but I can pour you a Clos and Chase, a Belchador, like all these Pinots or Chards, and say, okay, it can compete with high-end Village. It can compete with Premier Cru. It can go toe-to-toe.
Well, that's like, I have a good friend, Graham. He's doing his PhD, but he used to do wine tours with this like fancy bike company in Europe for years. And we just like go in on cases of Ontario Pinot together because it is delicious and it's almost always under $40 a bottle. And that's like
compare
the good
stuff. To Burgundy. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then, Burgundy, it's like you can be paying 40, 60, 80 bucks a bottle and it's still...
Still Village.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, so, you know, I mean, Burgundy's time-tested and true, and I don't want to discount that.
Nope.
But, you know, I say to people, I'm like, well, you know, we are here now drinking these wines. It could be one spark, one event, and all of a sudden the world goes crazy, you know, kind of like happened in California in the 70s. And
yeah,
it's like,
yeah, the decision of... that 70... What was that? 76. Mm. I think it was 76. When California went up against France.
Yeah.
I think it was 70. Anyway, but yeah.
You know, something like that. And then all of a sudden people go wild and our wines quadruple in price and no one can afford them anymore. We're like, why didn't I buy them before?
I know.
You know? So that's kind of like, you know, maybe it'll never happen in my lifetime. Maybe it'll happen next week.
Well, it has. Think of like in the Osoyoos region in BC. Think of like Checkmate. Those wines, some of those wines are getting 100 points, and now those wines are like hundreds of bucks a bottle.
Yeah.
You know, some of the highest end Mission Hill stuff is pretty pricey. So you're right. All it takes is just the right good press. which part of me is rooting for because I love Ontario wine,
yeah.
And part of me is selfish, mm-hmm. and I'm hoping it never happens. Yeah.
Well, because like I'll have people, like most of our travelers are from either US and then like secondary would be kind of like UK, Australia, those kind of places. And so, you know, I have a lot of people who've spent time in Napa, and then when they come here, they don't bat an eye at the fact that, you know, at Stratus, you're paying $40 to $60
yeah.
for like a nice big red, because there it's like, you know, there's such high prices.
Yeah.
So like overall, the wine value here, despite being a little bit more than your average Spanish or Portuguese wine at the LCBO or something, mm-hmm. it's not like astronomically overpriced. Like it's still pretty good bang for your buck in a lot of cases.
Yes. And as a professional uncle who doesn't have to spend money on raising children, I'm like, what's, you know, like, again, that's where my money goes. I want to hear more about your eating tour in Toronto.
Yeah, so essentially,
and what's your, and by the way, because that was a horrible intro by me.
Tell people
about it.
Yes, so we have like the New World Wine Tours brand doing these day trips, and then I had basically had the chance to create some food tours for Airbnb experiences when they launched here a couple of years ago.
Yep,
and so that was kind of like my first foray into food tourism. But then that kind of kept building and it just didn't make sense to have them all under one roof, so to speak. And so then last August, I freed up some time because I had been prepping for my like CMS SOM test. So I finished that up last August in like 2018.
So wait, hold on. Okay. No, I'm going to come back to the Quartermaster SOM, but continue. Okay. Sorry.
So I was doing that, prepped, finished that up. And then I was like, oh, I've got more time. So
yeah.
I'd been sitting on this concept to create kind of like a food tour company, which is called Eating Through TO, short for Toronto. But Eating Through TO was essentially a way to get like local food tours. And I really wanted to kind of promote local businesses, local chefs, and tie it in with like a blog element and potentially kind of like a YouTube-y type series
yeah.
that could, you know, show off some of the local talent. Because I feel like, you know, similar to like we were talking with wine, you know, I have some friends in New York and different places. You open up like a donut shop in New York, all of a sudden you have like 20,000 Instagram followers the next
yeah.
day. We have like a kick-ass donut shop here in Toronto. It's got like
crickets.
4,000 followers. It's like struggling to stay open. Probably better donuts here. You know, and I feel like that's the case on so many levels in Toronto. It's like this overly humble major city, which we're getting to a cool point. I think we have like an amazing swell of energy and attention on an international level right now in Toronto. So I'm happy to be a part of it. But like that was kind of the concept. Like create curated food experiences and tours for people, both local and abroad, but also kind of somehow contribute to promoting this city as like a food destination, as a dining and culinary place.
For people listening who either live in Toronto or going to visit Toronto, areas, restaurants, places you'd recommend?
Ooh, so many. So I'm a West Ender. So
okay, now hold on. Let's do this geographically. Now this is gonna be really hyper local for a second. I apologize. Uh-huh. What do you define as West Ender? Give me your borders.
I mean, so in theory, everything west of Yonge Street is the West End, but really, I think like west of Bathurst is where the West End kind of properly starts.
Okay,
because downtown you get like this more big box chain franchise. More of that.
Yeah,
like
because the real estate prices are more expensive. Oh, so expensive. The little guy can't afford a lot of the places near Yonge. Yeah.
So like, I mean, Chinatown's very local. So like, you know, that's further in. But kind of Spadina, Bathurst, and west.
Okay, so you're west of
Toronto.
Okay. And I'm east then because I'm just a little bit east of Parliament. So I guess I'm, you know, I'm more on the east side of things.
So don't get me wrong. I still love the East End, and there's a lot. Actually, there's a lot of cool new stuff going on in the East End right now. So I think like it's having its renaissance.
Yeah, no, go West End. It's a quick King Street streetcar ride away.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, so like I live around Ossington, so like I love kind of like that hood, Dundas West. There's a ton of like cool little niche spots.
Midfield Archive.
Yeah, it's so, like Midfield Archive.
Paris
is cool. Sakai Bar, if you're into sake, shout out to Stu, who's the owner. He's awesome. But yeah, so great food there. For like slightly higher end, but really cool stuff on like college, like Dilo is awesome.
Yep.
Bar Raval, Bar Isabel.
Bar Isabel, the best octopus in Toronto.
For sure.
Is Bar Isabel. That and their Bass Cake. I could live off their Bass Cake and octopus.
Yeah.
It'd be a weird diet. My doctor would hate me, but I could live off of those two things.
It's funny that you mentioned that though. I love seafood and I love bakeries. Mm-hmm. So like, like I'm obsessed. Nougateau is at this kick-ass eclair shop on Queen West, which is really good. Roselle is actually right by you.
But yeah.
They just opened a West End outpost at Dovercourt, so also delicious. One of my all-time favorite spots is Odd Soul on Ossington. It's like a Korean dive bar with loud hip-hop music.
Yep.
And like it's just cheap, delicious, and always go back.
The crazy thing about Ossington, back in 2000, yeah, like literally 2000, 2001, 2002, I dated a girl who lived on Ossington, just a little bit north of Bloor.
Mm.
And in 2000, what Ossington was then
it's like,
versus now, it's nuts in terms of the restaurant scene. And also Dundas West.
Oh, yeah.
Nuts compared to what it used to be. It's crazy.
Well, I moved into that area about like 6.5 years ago.
Yeah.
And Ossington was kind of chic then. But Dundas West was a bit patchy and spotty and not great.
Mm-hmm.
And now I feel like Dundas West is what Queen West was like a decade ago.
Yeah.
Like more like niche, chef driven, pushing the envelope, fun concepts. And, it, you know, due to the rent probably
being
a little bit lower, but you get this kind of thing going on. It's more creative and fresh.
Rent is like just, it's the goddamn worst.
It's you know, insane.
Like just, it's insane Toronto. Like my favorite bookstore called Elliot's on Yonge Street, gone because of rent. And how many restaurants and things you see, you know, one of my favorite restaurants in the distillery, gone because, you know, the landlords raised the rent. It is, it's funny. I think there is a connection between the good, the food scene of where you are versus just how expensive it is to pay your rent every month.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I want to circle back.
Okay.
One thing I forgot about, you were mentioning you have people that come in from all over the world for your wine tours.
Yes.
How shocked are they?
A lot of shock. I mean, a lot of people, I think they come here for different reasons. They're here for work, for conferences, to see Niagara Falls, you know, things like that, concerts, shows, whatever it might be. And then they kind of stumble upon the fact that we have a wine region an hour and 20 minutes from our city center. And so that's where people are like, oh, wow. And then they get there and they're expecting something like, I don't know.
Novelty, bad, insipid, mediocre, and at best, meh.
Exactly. Or maybe they've heard of ice wine.
And that's
the only thing they know.
Yeah. Oh, you have something beyond ice wine?
Exactly. Like they're expecting like every vineyard to just be pouring like 10 varieties of ice wine and that's it. Or something like that. So yeah, like, I mean, that's what I like about it is that, you know, it's not everyone's cup of tea. Sometimes people are looking for a more hot climate expression of viticulture.
Yeah.
But overall, I think people are very surprised and pleasantly surprised by what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And often they're disappointed they can't buy it. You know, they're like, oh, like, do you ship to New York? Do you ship to here? Do you ship to where? You're like, are you stocking anywhere? And it's
have you heard of something called the LCBO? They're this horrible, evil monopoly that makes wine. Sometimes they do good things as well, but they make wine shipments not fun.
No. It's very tough for smaller producers to get their wine in and out of this province.
Yeah, I've had that conversation many times with winemakers.
Yeah.
So, Mackenzie, as we wrap up, where would you like to see New World Wine Tours and the eating across TO? Just like what would be ideal for you 3-4 years down the road?
Yeah, I mean, just volume, I guess. You know, like as you start anything, it's like getting the name out there and getting a reputation and people seeing the value and enjoyment in it. So, just seeing it grow, eating through TO as well. I mean, we have some of these like neighborhood guide videos and different things we're producing. So just seeing people use the resources that are there is great.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I'm working on a concept as well to plan some kind of international booze and wine trips with a travel agent here in the city as well. So that could be the next step, the next brand. We'll see what happens with that. But
if people want to get a hold of you, get a hold of the websites, your businesses, where can people go?
Yeah, go to like newworldwinetours.com or eatingthroughto.com. We're all over Instagram if you're into social media. Mm-hmm. And then I mean, we've got like mailing lists. So if you want to check out one-off food tours or specialty wine tours, and we're working on a string of farmhouse dinners for next year. And
oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, so yeah. Lots in the mix, lots coming up, and both for locals and internationals, you know, like we want it to be fun for people who live here too. So,
you know, I think about it, all the farm to table movements, which are much greater now, yeah, that must help your business.
It
because
does.
The idea of like just because you're hyper focused on local.
Yeah. Well, I think like, I know, you know, growing up, like I feel like everything that was a chain was exciting. It was like, oh, go to Walmart, go to Quiznos, yeah, try the this. Oh, we're getting a this in our town.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And now we're kind of coming off that being like, okay, that was fun. Now it's really boring and predictable. And I feel especially living downtown, people are all about like supporting local, what's new, what's niche. And so it's a great time to be here. Mm-hmm. And you know, that tying in with, we are surrounded essentially by like gorgeous farmland, vineyards, orchards, beautiful water. You know, like
yeah,
for a city, we have a gorgeous surrounding area. And so like local cheese, people don't realize how much amazing cheese is in Ontario and Quebec. And
yeah,
so just like paying for those products instead of imported alternatives, which I love imported alternatives too. You know, there's some amazing stuff coming out of Europe and different places. But when you realize like, you know, why not support this guy who's like working so hard 2 hours from me rather than paying someone else?
And also, I don't know if you've had it recently, the foie gras at Quiznos, not very good. Not very
That'll
good.
That'll be the day.
Yeah. Hey, Mackenzie, thank you so much for being a part of it.
Thank you.
I 100% agree. Do these tours.
Yes.
They will help get you into wineries you haven't heard of. Also, you don't have to drive. You can just enjoy your day. And you don't have that specter. And also, let's face it, drinking and driving, it's, you know, it's kind of uncool. So,
exactly. And yeah, we'll spoil you and we'll teach you anything you want to know.
Yeah,
so
absolutely. Thanks so much, Mackenzie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.